In the first century, to be Jewish was essentially to be a member of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were by far and away the most dominant expression of Judaism. And so one of the things of the Pharisees, and one of the reasons that we encounter them so often, you know, that Jesus is always running into trouble from the Pharisees, is that there were so many of them, and that most of the disciples probably would have grown up in and around this expression of the faith. The Pharisees wanted to remain as pure as they possibly could. They understood that the way that the Messiah would come, the way that God would finally break through again into human history, was if there were a people who kept the laws and commandments of Moses so perfectly, so faithfully, that this people were finally established, that were worthy of God's intervention, that they were able and capable of allowing God to intervene in their lives. And so part of that was this deep and profound sense that they had to remain absolutely isolated, absolutely pure. And so in lots of ways, the wall that now surrounds the nation of Israel, the rabbi-proof fence, if you like, that is there and surrounding Jerusalem, surrounding Israel, is really only a modern manifestation of an ideology that dates back to those ancient times. The sense that there had to be this complete and absolute separation between the Jewish people and everyone else. So when we arrive at the scene in the Acts of the Apostles tonight, in Acts chapter 10, first we need to do a little bit of background. So Peter, Simon Peter, would have had this profound understanding, this profound sense that he had to be faithful to every Jewish law and ritual. Even though he knew that Jesus often broke these rituals, these commandments, even though Jesus would regularly eat with tax collectors, he would visit the homes of Gentiles, he would mix, he would have discussions and conversations with people who weren't Jewish. For Peter and for the other apostles, as good Jewish boys, they wouldn't have countenanced this as a possibility. Acts 10 begins with this wonderful scene. We've got a journey of Peter and some of the other apostles. And Peter has gone up in the afternoon, that was the custom, to pray, to say his prayers. Presumably it's a fairly warm afternoon, and he seems to be kind of dozing off. It's a lovely kind of scene. And like the bloke that he was, he begins to get hungry, and he begins to think about food. And so in the midst of this prayer, in the midst of this pondering about the wonder and beauty of God, he's hungry. And so what does he have? He has a vision of this huge cloth being laid down from heaven. And on the cloth were all kinds of wonderful food to eat, different kinds of animals. But what was interesting was that it wasn't just the clean animals. It wasn't just the animals that the law allowed you to kill and eat. There were all sorts of other things that the law strictly prohibited. And the Lord addressed Peter and said, "Peter, get up, kill and eat." And Peter, again, as the good Jewish boy, said, no, Lord, I couldn't possibly. I can't eat things that are clean and unclean. No, it's just a conceptual impossibility for Peter. And the Lord again says to Peter, "Get up, kill and eat." Three times we're told that the Lord appears to Peter and says, "Go and do this." It's at that moment that the messengers from Cornelius, the star of the Acts passage that we have just read, arrive, saying to Peter, "Come." Our master, Cornelius, he's a commander in the Roman army, and he's saying, "Can you please come and visit our master? This amazing experience is happening within his own life." And so Peter, being faithful, gets up and goes to visit Cornelius. Cornelius, as we see in the reading tonight, then falls down at the feet of Peter and begins to worship him. Peter says, no, that's silly, just get up. And they begin to talk and begin to share. "Peter, you know, what do you want, Cornelius? Why have you summoned me? Why have you gone to so much trouble to get me to come and visit you here in Joppa?" And Cornelius then begins to explain that even though he's not Jewish, even though he's not a follower of the law, even though he isn't well-versed in the laws and commandments of God. He himself has had this vision. He himself has had this insight where he's heard the voice of God speaking to him, and he's wanting to understand what this is all about. And so Peter begins to understand that the vision that he just had was only the first sign of what God was doing as he was beginning to break down this wall that was separating him and other Pharisees and other Jews from the Gentile world. Peter was beginning to understand that indeed, as he says to Cornelius, God does not have favorites. God does not have limits. God is not restricted by our nationality, by our dietary observances. God is able to operate and to work outside of these boundaries. And so we begin in this to experience the wonder of what God is doing. That God is reaching beyond national boundaries. God is reaching beyond the conceptions and the limitations that the Jewish people had often imposed upon God to say, no, God is bigger. God is greater. God's love is not going to come to an end in the midst of this. God's love is so strong. God's love is so powerful that it will break through any of our misconceptions. It will break through any restriction that we place upon that love. We hear then in 1 John 4, a second reading tonight, this declaration about the very essence of God. We're not told that God is loving. We're not told that God, on occasion, has loving feelings. What are we told? That God is love. At the very heart of God, what it means to be God, is this experience of love. That what God is, in who God is love. Not the emotion, not just some warm and fuzzy feeling, but this holding of us as the human race in this incredible honor, in wanting to share with us that same gift and that same insight, to share with us the very identity of who God is. Then finally, in the gospel, and I love this gospel in part because it was in hearing this gospel proclaimed many, many years ago now at an Antioch meeting back in Bega, when my parish priest was sharing something of his own vocation story, and he was talking about his inability to respond and wondering whether he had the gifts and the ability and the possibility of actually responding to God, whether he was whole enough, whether he was good enough. And suddenly he said he heard this passage spoken deeply into his heart. And as he repeated the passage, then suddenly it began to speak into my heart. And I felt this physical response deep within me when Jesus addressed me, as I'm sure he will address many of you at one time in your life. Because you did not choose me. No, I chose you. You see, so often in contemporary religious experience, so often in the way that the New Age and other popular movements will attempt to express what religion is about, they will say it's about our initiative. They will say it's about what we desire and what we want to do. They will say it's about our longing, about our response, about our search for God. But here at the heart of the Gospels, Jesus reminds us, no, it's the complete opposite of that. It's about God's initiative, about God who is love, taking this initiative, taking this impulse, wanting us to know and to experience deeply within us that he has chosen us. He has called us. He has commissioned us. And what are we called? What are we commissioned to do and to be? To be bearers of fruit. To be the very presence of God in the world. That's what it means to be an image bearer. God has chosen us. God has called us. God has commissioned us to first deeply experience this love. To understand that his love has no boundaries. To understand that his love calls us and commissions us to be his very sign and presence in the world. As we continue in these last weeks of Lent, to long for the Spirit of God to come. As it fell upon Cornelius and his household, and as they began to praise and sing the wonders and glory of God, so also we're called to do the same, to open ourselves to the power of the Spirit so that we can acknowledge and understand the wonder and the beauty of the love that God has prepared for us.